Hi.
Boo.
How you doing? Thank you for coming out on this gorgeous, rainy Melbourne day. Welcome to Mourn the Wheel On. And sad is rad. So some of you may be familiar with Mourn the Wheel On, some of you may not. So that is the name of my podcast. And I'll give you your basic introduction of it. Basically, I talk to creatives of all persuasions, try and get inside their creative minds, see what's going on in there. And another unique angle of the podcast is each week I ask people for a creative prompt, and then I'll write a poem according to those prompts. So the listeners are very much invested in the show. And I will be doing one of those at the end of the show today, towards the end. Today we're celebrating the fact that sad is rad. I think that might deserve a round of applause. this is going to be an exploration through melancholy and looking at it, you know, not necessarily as a negative thing, because I don't think it has to be negative. There's a reason why we are attracted to sad music, for instance. So we're going to explore today through music, poetry and comedy. And we've got some very, very special artists coming up for you. Today, the focus is going to be much more on performance rather than conversation, as opposed to the podcast, but you can always listen to the podcast anytime and hear so much more of my voice, if you please. But firstly, I'm going to welcome to the stage a musician who I've just come to my attention. She brought out an amazing single this year. In fact, she's just brought out another amazing single. She's been kicking it large at Big Sound. So I want you to make her feel very welcome, Hannah Blackburn.
You would leave.
So I pick myself back up from the ground. You must be having fun, 'cause I haven't seen you around. Silence seems to be loudest sound. Did you always know you'd leave? Did you always know you'd leave? Did you always know you'd leave?
My name's Hannah Buffin. I write sad songs. this song's called I Wanna Love You.
Stay there for a moment, actually, or drown my face in a bucket of tears. How amazing was that? Yes. You've just been to Big Sound. How was that?
Full on.
Full on.
I lost my voice.
For those who don't know exactly what Big Sound is, including myself, really, what is it?
It's like a music conference. So, like, I think it was like 150 bands come from like all around Australia to play, and then the music industry comes and they watch, and you just kind of mingle for like 5 days or
big,
whatever it
is. Big fat networking opportunity. Yes. Yeah. You have lost your voice, and you sang so beautifully.
Thank you.
Thank you for making those sacrifices for us. Give another round of applause. Thank you. Now, we have something very, very special for you. We have a poet about to enter the stage. She won the 2018 Melbourne Spoken Word Prize. And I love this little bit of her bio. She loves dogs. She loves people, but also secretly wishes that all people were dogs. And that means she's a woman after my own heart. So please make her feel very welcome on stage, Natalie Jeffries.
Thanks so much, Sean, for inviting me to be here. I really vibe with the theme of today. Funnily enough, well, no, not funny at all. Just came at a very good, fortunate time. My mum's currently in the hospital, and she is a little bit notorious at not crying in front of other people because she's one of those people that will always put other people first. And so we were seeing her yesterday, and for pretty obvious reasons, she wasn't feeling very well. And so we mentioned sad is rad, and she had a good little cry. And so we're very proud of her for that. So thank you for that, Sean. It's a gift in disguise. Yeah. I am going to play it a little bit fast and loose with the term poetry. I am going to perform a short story, which is part of my book that I'm currently collating called Purity. It kind of goes through the journey of the last few years where, because of health reasons, I have had times where I'm not allowed to drive, and I've had to take the train on Sunday mornings. And throughout this period, I kind of transitioned from living with anxiety to kind of experiencing more depression-like symptoms. And so this was just my way of kind of how I saw the world around me as I transitioned through this period. So this is called Cover Judging. With scarf on coat, on cardigan, on T-shirt, I hug head to shoulders. I don't want my neck to lose its extra shelter beneath my collarbones. I steer the hull of my entire being in order to scan my surroundings. An elderly couple waddles closer. There's something about an elderly couple that seems to beckon uninvited narration of their lives. Sunday train man wears a leather jacket and a flat cap. There's a fine line between a leather jacket symbolising badassery and it being purely practical, to which Sunday train man was much the latter. I digress. I'm cover judging his book, maybe just cover synopsizing. Under plaid-cloaked, de-elasticized skin may lie the baddest ass to ride the 8:17 train on a Sunday morning. Sunday train woman has a head shaped somewhat similar to a grapefruit. She carries possessions in a canvas bag on wheels. I don't have many more descriptors for Sunday train woman. Sunday train man had a more distinctive book cover. They say something in Mandarin to each other. Or Cantonese. Should I know that? You racist. But how would I know that? You live in a country with thousands of peoples that speak both languages. You should know this. A sound of disapproval rings in my ears. Something like someone shaking their head with such vigour that it becomes both melodic and percussive at the same time. Like Richard Nixon motorboating without boobs. Not that I know what he sounds like motorboating with or without boobs, but I know at the back of my head, motorboating Nixon judges me. Sunday train man giggles. Cute. It's surprising to see an elderly couple enjoying each other's air. Of course, I'm sure most elderly couples are in love, but I have come to expect geriatric lovers to discard intimacy. They chaperone a pillar of space in between their bodies to hold their mutual fatigue of living. I suspect they aren't as rosy-eyed as they may have been some 40 years ago. Sunday train woman Tower of Pisa tilts against her partner's side in lieu of nudging him with her elbow, which is weighed down by belongings fetched from her canvas bag. That moment, along with a steam cloud of impromptu laughter from his breath, was enough to convince me that they still loved each other despite themselves. This continued for months. Sunday morning, 8:10 a.m., 7 minutes of waiting. Sunday train couple arrives slowly. We sit on the same carriage most weeks. It is suitable distance from a different woman who wet retches into the bins on platform 2 each morning. True story. Sunday train couple smile and speak in whichever mother tongue birthed their partnership. Sunday morning, 8:10 a.m. This one has a striking disparity to the others. Sunday train man, but no woman. He looks cold. He looks lonely. The kind of lonely that is forced upon you, accepted in bravery. A war medal to pin to his leather jacket. A week passes. 8:10 a.m. Groaning fatigue. Sundays should not be allowed to start this early. Sunday train man waddles in. Eyes to his toes as if he's forgotten his choreography and is plotting his course one step at a time. No Sunday train woman. Oh. Shock tidal waves over me. How do you comfort a stranger? Do I say something? What could I possibly say? I've been watching you for a while. You usually have a female friend, but she is not here right now. I assume because you are both old that she is dead. Condolences. The jolt to my system continues to ebb and flow. A soft, shadowed sadness washes into the tide. A ringing Doppler effect swells between my ears. How do you grieve the loss of a stranger? I haven't travelled by train for a while. I think of them infrequently, but I do think of them, which is more than I can say from any other stranger I've met. I do not expect a resolution. This is not a novella, a book of limericks, or even a get-well-soon card. This is real. No book judged could predict this. Disdain wrinkles my brow and glazes my eyes. It's the dirty little secret that parents kept from you at bedtime. The resolution of grief is lethargic and unrelenting. Well, no, the secret is that grief is lethargic, unrelenting, but most disappointingly frequent. Closure is rarely gifted to us in a leather-bound journal of explanations. Prayer might work, but God will answer you in whichever way he pleases. I pictured reaching the age of Sunday train couple. 4 or even 5 times my current lifespan. With the heartache as common an occurrence as it is, the concept itself was exhausting. In my childhood, I assume we'd be raptured by now. I assume we would collapse as a society. Maybe climate change would triumph and that my classmates and I would be taken before we had the obligation of aging. I pictured that I would be taken into my father's soothing arms, but God will answer you in whichever way he pleases. Heaviness is a blanket I wear daily now. Several months later, I'm back to riding the Sunday morning train. I'm late to almost every engagement, perhaps because it makes me feel more like a shadow. Heaviness is a shadow I precede daily. Today I carry just enough regret to motivate me to run for the train, for which I am inevitably late anyway. I turn my eyesight perpendicular to the trajectory of the train. There are 2 kinds of numbness I've experienced. A numbness to sadness that momentarily dooms me and a numbness to joy that I am grateful for. The latter tells me that I'm working hard to be glad. As the train slowly crawls out of the horizon towards the platform, my eyes flicker towards a familiar distraction. Numbness. They're here. Both of them. She is here. She looks paler, but just as stout. She was no longer a secondary character within Sunday Train Man's book. Her book cover is lilac-coloured and rose-scented. The plastic seal on her hardcover reflects shades of courage that I hope are shown in the sky after it rains. I can imagine the exclamation that her deathbed made as she chose to heal. You have the audacity to leave me wanting? She would reply, you had the audacity to leave him mourning. Of course, I don't know that she was ever dying at all. But I knew that if I opened her book, I would crack the spine. I've held sorrow sacred for too long. In this glittering moment of numbness, I let sorrow go. Because that's enough reading for today. I watched her smile, her tilts, and his muffled laugh. The 8:17 train on a Sunday morning whispered gracefully in front of us. He will answer you in whichever way he pleases. Thank you.
You can do a bit better than that. For a round of applause, Nellie Jeffries. I want to ask you something about your little side business, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Do you write songs for people? Is that correct?
I do. So I have a side business called Puddle Dog Productions. I write songs for gifts. So, so if you are looking for a gift and you kind of don't know what you're wanting, you fill out this questionnaire all about the person that you're wanting the gift for, and then I write a song.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you write, like, revenge songs?
I have specifically said in my terms and conditions it cannot be used to insult anyone else. But I have had requests.
I was going to ask you to write a song about Dusty Martin, but forget about it.
Give it a go.
Give another round of applause.
Thank you.
Our next guest is someone who came across my radar. I don't even know how, actually. It was in my Instagram feed or something. She's very, very, very funny person. And she's got a new show called Woke, which is coming to the Sydney Fringe Festival. I was very lucky to see a little sneak preview of that show. And it is awesome, and it's going to come to Melbourne soon too. She's got the best name in the world too, so please make her feel very welcome. Aurelia St. Clair!
Hi. Hello. You can't change someone, but you can be unhappy trying. Welcome to my TED Talk. Now I'm here today to tell you all a bit more about myself. I'll tell you about something that happened to me recently. I met this guy recently, and he asked me, where are you from? And I said, oh, me? I'm just from North Melbourne, because that is where I live. And then he said to me, you don't look like you're from Melbourne. So I said to him, you don't look like you can afford to talk to me. Bye. I do get that question a lot, where are you from? And I totally get it. I know that people are curious. I know they want to get to know me better. But I know that they're also asking because they want to know, how dangerous is she? Is she in a gang? I mean, I could be. I do come from a country that has a history of racially motivated gang violence. I'm from Germany. I know what some of you are thinking. She's from Germany? How? Why? It is true, there are brunettes in Germany. Somehow we live in a world where anything is possible, right? We have talking watches and electric cars. But when somebody who looks like me says, I'm from Germany, mind blown. I am from Germany. I moved to Australia around 5 years ago. And this year, I became a permanent resident. Thank you. Thank you so much. A slight pause there. Just like the Department of Home Affairs. 27-month bridging visa. But here I am. I finally feel like now that I'm a permanent resident, I finally feel like I feel comfortable in Australia. I finally feel like I can say some really Australian things. Like I can finally say the C word. The C word in Australia, of course, is colonizer. I moved here 5 years ago, and when I first arrived here, there are a lot of things that I had to learn. First of all, of course, English language, because there's things that I can say in German and they make perfect sense, but then I translate that to English and it makes no sense at all. For example, in German, I can say, du gehst mir auf den Keks. That means as much as, you're being really annoying right now. Literal translation, you're stepping on my biscuits. Or the Aussie version, mate, stop stepping on me Tim Tams. Of course, when I was new in Australia, I also had to get a job. Now, I actually like to not put a lot of effort into job applications, just so my employer knows what to expect once I start working there. And I sort of approach job applications with the same sort of confidence that some men do who online date without a profile picture. I never send a cover letter. But as part of, you know, getting a job, I went to a lot of interviews, a lot of interviews. And one of them will always stick with me because there are two ladies interviewing me. And they're actually really lovely. But they asked me, Aurelia, how would you feel working as part of an international team? And I said, bitch, I put the international in your team. Yeah, I didn't get that job. I did get a different job, though. For a while, I worked in a role where I worked at a lot of events, where there'd be parents with young children. And I just have to say that parents in 2019 are so woke. They're so switched on. Like I see a little kid with a tag on their T-shirt or a tag on their backpack with the parents' names and phone numbers on them. Names and phone numbers. And I just think that's such a great idea because it makes it so much easier for me to contact the parents and ask for a ransom. Before, I had to be like, hey, little boy, what's your dad's number? He didn't know. Had to keep him. He's my son now. Cheaper than adoption. I have been thinking a little bit about the saying. There's a saying that goes, the best revenge is a life well lived. And that really didn't work before social media, did it? Like, how would your ex know how much better you're doing now? Like, you'd have to go past their house in a horse and carriage, just hoping that they're home and looking out their window. That's why all of my social media is really open and very easy to find, just in case an ex is looking me up. Or my dad, because we haven't been talking a lot recently. And it's just really important to me that if my dad were to stumble upon my Instagram, he'd know how fucking hot I look in a bikini. Like, I know we live in this age of information, where if you're looking for something or someone, you can pretty much find them, right? Like, we have Google, Facebook, Instagram. But where the fuck is my dad? Knock, knock, who's there? Not my dad. It's okay, I'm very well adjusted, clearly. I was catching up with a friend recently, and she told me about an app. And she said, this app is amazing. It's so woke, you have to get it. This app sends you 5 reminders every day that you will inevitably die. And with each reminder, it gives you an inspirational quote. Yeah. And I said, girl, I already have Instagram. It's okay. I guess you can sort of tell that I do spend a lot of time online. And recently I was on Facebook and I saw a quiz. And the title of the quiz, I knew I had to take it. It said, take this quiz to find out how many children you will have. Yeah, so of course I had to take it. There are 30 questions in this quiz, and I answered every one of them. And it told me, you will have no children at all. And I just never thought I'd find out I'm infertile that way. Luckily, I already adopted. I have been Aurelia St. Clair. You've been wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Give out a little bit more applause. Can I ask you a question? Are you prone to melancholia?
Yes, sometimes. When I've listened to a really sad album, then yes.
Because the cliche is that a lot of comedians are just utter manic depressives when they're not on stage.
Oh, it's
and I certainly know a couple that are.
It's easier to write when you're sad. When you're happy, you have nothing to write about.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Mm. It builds a fire of sadness. I imagine sadness being actually quite wet. I don't think it'd burn that well. But anyway, thank you so much. All right, who's on next? Me. Awesome. Okay, so I've got something pretty special to debut for you now. I'll get my fellow bandmate on stage and he can set up while I'm talking. Please welcome to the stage Mr. Justin Bernasconi. So I'll go back to the source of our collaboration. We did a live show at the Merry Creek Tavern a little while ago, which is where we've been doing most of our live shows. And it was a dog-themed one. And I know Justin's got great chops. And I was going to get up on stage and do this poem, but then I thought, I'm going to see if he's prepared to just get up and wing it with me. And he did, and it was fucking amazing. It was such a beautiful experience. So we've decided to form a little band together. We are called the Crystal Veins. We're going to do a couple of poems for you. This is called Don't Drink the Heavy Fog. That day you walked up the mountain, I knew you weren't coming back. Partly because you said, I'm never coming back. But mostly because I'd never seen the mountain look so hungry before. Tell me you don't want me to go, you said, as we packed your Spice Girls backpack together. Why? You're not a child, I replied sternly. And then we paused to look at your Spice Girls backpack and laughed like children. The weather was turning and the clouds above the mountain were whipping themselves into mashed potato. Elmore Leonard said, never start a book with the weather. I told you I wasn't sure if you'd hurt me enough to produce a whole fucking book. Well, that's on me, you said, but even if it's a poem, at least wait a few lines before you mention the fucking weather. So I did. For you. And now I'm wondering whether you hurt me enough after all. You started off blonde at the bottom of the mountain, but I knew by the time you got to the top, your hair would be jet black and your eyes would close over as you wouldn't need to see anymore. The wind touching the fine hairs on your arm would telegraph everything you need to know about your surroundings. Your dark hair would make it harder to spot you through the telescope you left behind for me as a mountain pulled you firmer into its embrace. But as if I'd be looking for you anyway. As if. I don't want to forgive you because at least resentment keeps you in my Instagram feed. I don't want to keep a vigil for you because candles make me sneeze and I hate camping. I don't want to change your mind because you wouldn't even change your sheets for me. He used to point out the stains left by ex-lovers like defeated countries on a warmonger's map. There are easier ways to die than this. That day you walked up the mountain, you discarded your leather pants and leopard skin shirt at the base. Free from your body, I watched them reanimate and revert to their animalistic forms. I watch them now, your pants and shirt, grazing around the insidious pea-green foothills. Every now and then they pause and jerk their heads up, as if they can sense approaching danger. And then they go about their business, as if the danger never existed in the first place. Thank you. So now, to honour the source of our collaboration, we're gonna try this shit again. Justin's never.
I wouldn't call it shit.
Well, let's get to the end of the poem and reevaluate. Justin's never heard this poem before. I wrote it this morning, and it's written in response to a prompt from one of our beloved listeners, and the prompt was. Spring and the beginning of change and new beginnings. So this is called Stay Gold. I'm in a plane, a large passenger jet. We're flying high, destination unknown. I am the sole passenger. I look everywhere. There's not a single soul around. Not even a snarky flight attendant that will refuse me champagne. I look out the window and I see what I feel. Nothing. No thing. I'm as empty as the sky. Then I notice the door to the cockpit is open and I hear a voice say, "Why don't you come up here? Keep us both company." Suddenly I'm a little bit excited. I've never been in a cockpit before. I walk up the long aisle. Aisles always make me think of weddings. And I think, wouldn't it be grand to marry somebody on a plane? And I consider a new business plan, the Mile High Marriage Club. But somebody's probably done it before. Somebody's always done something before. I get to the cockpit and I fall into the seat beside the pilot. The pilot is beautiful. But they keep changing sexes. Sometimes it's a woman, sometimes it's a man, over and over again. Either way, they are so sparkling with beauty. I say, "I don't mean to be rude, but are you a woman or a man?" They say to me, "When you're up this high, all the barriers and the labels fall away. They can't survive at this altitude. I'm whoever you want me to be." "Well, I just want you to be yourself," I say. They answer, "I was hoping you'd say that, honey. Because honestly, that's all I can be." "How are you feeling today?" "Well," I say, "since you're honest with me, I have to say I am feeling a little sad." "Why?" they ask. "My football team lost a really big game." They laugh out loud. "Okay, honey, I'm sorry to laugh at your feelings, but that's a really fucking dumb reason to be sad." You know that, right? I smile and say, "Yeah, you're right. It's pretty dumb. But it's not the real reason. It's just a trigger. Whenever I get reason to be sad, it's like a doorway to darkness opens up in my head. And I find it so hard to not walk into that room. And there's all the deeper, darker reasons for being sad." "Well, let me ask you something," they say. "What colour is the room?" "Well, sometimes it's a gold hue and sometimes it's this dreary, drudgy black." "Okay, honey, I thought so. I have something important to tell you. The gold is melancholy and the black is depression. It's okay to be in the room when it's gold, but you should leave when it turns black." Melancholy is always tinged with the hope of something better. But depression will steal your hope away. It feeds on the death of hope. Don't let it do that, honey. You've got too much to offer. And then I start to cry, bright, glittery, golden tears. Where are we going, by the way? I never thought to ask. And at that moment, a giant mountain appears through the clouds. We're going straight into the side of that mountain, honey. Because sometimes the only way to change things is to end things. And just remember that being sad doesn't have to be bad. Stay gold, honey. Because sometimes being sad is rad. And the mountain gets closer and closer and closer until everything turns gold. Mr. Justin Berlusconi! How are we going for time? Actually, I'll do one more. You want? Yeah. We got. Yeah. Do one more. Bonus one. I want to give a shout out to my producer, Derek Myers, who's in the house from Castaway Studios. Because without him, More Than the Wheel would not exist. I've left some cards and stuff on the table. I'm going to pursue everyone who's been on stage tonight and do some more long-form interviews on the show. Thank you so much for coming. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you to Melbourne Rise Festival. Thank you to Jason on sound. He's amazing. If anyone's coming to the after party tonight, DJ Hot Wheels, a.k.a. me, is going to be DJing right here. All right, this is called I Am. Maybe something a little jaunty this time. Jaunty, that is a funny word, isn't it? Well, not too jaunty. It is about sadness. Yeah, little jaunty sadness. Whatever the fuck that is. Let's give it a go. I'll start? Okay. I am hot, stinking, decaying light. I am the melting ice caps at the bottom of your whiskey glass. I am the shh on the tip of the librarian's lips. I am that small purple bruise on your thigh that you have no recollection of receiving. I am the dust slowly gathering in the grooves of the record you left on the turntable overnight. I am the big I am. I am that letter you never sent. I am the recession you had to have. I am sorry about that. I want to be your economic recovery. I want to be my economic recovery. I'm a grand design in danger of not being finished and way over budget. I'm the drawer full of Michael Jackson's unused left-handed gloves. I'm the ground control to your Major Tom. I'm 33 dogs that can't even handle this right now. I'm Grumpy Cat's secret smile when nobody else is around. Rest in peace. I'm very good at opening, terrible at closing. I'm the lipstick you use to write upon your mirror, here lies buried treasure. I am this far away from being this far away from you. I'm the grammar Nazi taking apart your status update. I'm concerned at the diminishing effects of the word Nazi when describing anything harsh. I am okay. Thanks for asking. I'm a free-floating, full torso, vaporous apparition. I can't walk through walls, but I can walk through trees. I have no explanation for that. I'm the painting that the painting of Dorian Gray was painted over. I'm that noise you make in your sleep when you turn over in bed. I'm the jerk photobombing your family holiday snaps. I'm the dick you drew in the Herald Sun. I am the books you never finish. I am less than certain, but more than unsure. I'm the submarine caught in the seaweed of your subtext. I am the snow-covered pine trees that break your fall when the plane goes down. I am the cherry stem deftly manipulated by Audrey Horne's tongue. I am everything all the time. And I'm truly grateful, but I'm not yours. Not yet. Justin Bernasconi, thank Natalie Jeffries, thank Arroyo St. Clair, thank Hannah Blackburn, and thank yourselves, because you're fucking amazing. You've been listening to, I just remembered we're recording this for the podcast, so I should do some sort of outro, I guess. You've been listening to More Than the Wheel On. I don't know what episode number it is. We're coming at you from the top. Maybe I'll record that later. Thank you for listening to More Than the Wheel On. Wheel On out. Thank you.